Coming up on Chasing the Natty, our first massive weekend of spring games for 2025 have come and gone. While it may have been difficult, I have done the research and I have with me the notes and takeaways I believe are the most impactful for your CFF drafts this upcoming year. We've got a lot to get to, so let's go ahead and get started. I have all that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching to the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there with one of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether that be CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog, Best Ball. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether it's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support what we do here even further, make sure when you go and sign up for one of those yearly membership tiers that you use the promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can always just show us some love by leaving a like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you just leave a 5-star review and make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also shows the game of college fantasy football in general some support. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. And the show is at Chasing the Natty. And what I meant to also throw in there with the opening spiel there, sorry for those of you who skipped through that and are wondering why I'm still talking like this. We over at the website, we're finally getting up a lot of our stuff that is getting prepared for the 2025 season. We have our CFF redraft rankings up. Myself, Chris K, and Chris Moxley all have our rankings up and ready to go. We should have CFF ADP ready for you guys to use sometime this week, so be on the lookout for all of that. All right, spiel is over. Now to get down to business. Y'all, we got a lot to get to. It is going to be a true rapid-fire reaction kind of show. I've got 25 teams lined up here today, and I'll be real, I'm not even sure I'm going to get to all of them. It was a massive weekend for spring games all across the country, and I should go ahead and put my obligatory disclaimer here up at the front. We all, if you've been listening to this long enough or you've been playing college fantasy long enough, you know there's only so much you can really take away from spring games, but they are, in many cases, our first true look at so many teams in terms of actually getting our eyeballs on them. At least that would be the case if we didn't have paranoid coaches all over the country that are, you know, scared to death of any kind of film getting out about plays, any kind of film getting out about their players that could get poached from the portal. Head coaches, not to go on this rant again, but whether you guys like it or not, these guys are already being poached. These guys are already being reached out to through back channels. Like, it's super clear, as we found out with Nico Iamaleava last week. It doesn't even have to be other coaches reaching out to your players. If these players already feel like that they're not starting, they're likely already, like, putting feelers out one way or another. So to me, it's all dumb. It's ridiculous. It's ruining spring games, spring showcases here later on in the year. I was so mad that I was not able to watch my dogs this weekend because Kirby's one of these coaches that's scared to death of everybody poaching. And it's become this domino effect, right? Where as soon as one team decided, oh, we're not gonna televise our spring game anymore, every other coach wanted to do that as well because they're like, oh, why would we give up that advantage? So basically ended up being that maybe only a couple of teams had real spring games on TV this weekend. Even if you did, even if they did, they were on, like, you know, ACC Network Plus that you can't even really get even, you know, through regular channels or anything like that. It just became so ridiculous. So this year, more than any other year, as we've seen really just with beat reporting in general as well, like, coaches aren't letting anything out. So we'll see what kind of takeaways we can get through here. The good news is I do think that's going to help but make it to where we can move along through these teams a little bit quicker this year because, you know, again, there's not as much to take away, or what there is to take away is mostly what's let through the lens of all these beat reporters and what they're allowed to put out there. So we will certainly see. So, like I said, we've got 25 teams to get through here today. We got a lot to get through. Again, we'll see how many teams we get in here. I do have a hard out at some point, so if what might end up being is I'll kind of we'll go through the Power Four teams here first, and then when I get to the Power Four, at the end of the Power Four teams, I'll kind of look at how long we've been discussing things. And if I think I can make it through the G5 teams, I'll go ahead and do it in this recording. If not, don't worry, y'all. I'll get you a second recording out later this week that can cover the G5 teams that occurred this weekend. Or you can probably go listen to the G5 Hive and get some pretty in-depth look over there as well. But you should always listen to my shows as well. Anyway, let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to throw up the school logo here on the screen. Again, unfortunately, just didn't have time to put together full graphics this week, so you guys are just going to have to enjoy the logo being next to my head if you're watching this on YouTube for this week, but it gets the general idea across. We'll start with Louisville, as you can see on the screen here. This one occurred on Friday. It was kind of the first one that we got a really good look at. Our own Felix Sharp over at Campus Canton was actually able to get eyes on the ground and provided some great analysis from his work over there. And from what we were able to see in this spring game is pretty much what we've been able to see from the open practices as well. We have a clear starting lineup with Louisville. We got Miller Moss as your starting quarterback. The three starting wide receivers are, as expected, Chris Bell and Colin Lacey. And then it looks like Antonio Meeks has claimed that extra outside position there. And obviously, Isaac Brown and Duke Watson are your 1A, 1B running backs. We should expect to see a lot of them this year, considering that, you know, they're both Watson and Brown are freaks of nature. I'll go ahead and get them out of the way. Isaac Brown did not play a ton in this game. He had 4 carries for 10 yards, sat pretty early on because why would you risk injury from there? Meanwhile, Duke Watson had himself a long touchdown. I believe he was on the first drive of the game, 60-yard touchdown. And then he proceeded to run for 7 yards on his remaining 3 carries before he was sat down. And so, obviously, we're protecting the running backs there. We did get to see a pretty extended look at the passing game. Miller Moss tossed 26 passes in this game for 208 yards and a touchdown. And a lot of you are probably wondering who were the net beneficiaries at receiver. And we absolutely got a pretty clear answer for this game at the very least. Our top target was tied between Colin Lacey and Terrence McWilliams. Terrence McWilliams, I do believe, was playing on that second team there. So Colin Lacey, 9 targets, 6 catches, 99 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, Chris Bell, 7 targets, 5 catches, 39 yards. As I kind of joked in a tweet, if you listen to those stat lines, if you're a Colin Lacey fan, if you're drafting him later in drafts, which granted he is going at a pretty good discount compared to Chris Bell, this is everything. If you're like me and you're a Chris Bell fan and you're still believing that that outside position wide receiver is going to get the majority of targets, this is nothing. It's a single game. You guys know how the narratives go. I'm still a believer in Chris Bell, but I fully admit that I probably should be giving Colin Lacey a little bit more of the time of day. He has looked really good in spring practices so far this year, so I'll definitely probably move him up my rankings a little bit. But I will say, in my rankings, I do believe I'm being pretty generous with the kind of volume that I'm giving Lacey in my back of the napkin projections here. Like, where are you, Lacey? He is currently, there he is. Yeah, I'm giving him 75 targets, which is pretty high amount for the slot wide receiver in Brohm's system, and that's still roughly putting him at around about anywhere from 700 to 750 receiving yards, depending on which system I'm using here. And so I would say that Lacy's going to have himself some really good weeks, but I'm still believing in Bell being that outside guy there. So let's go ahead and move on to our next team here. Let's keep it in the ACC. We'll go conference by conference, and we'll go, like I said, we'll go to Virginia here now. And pretty much the first thing I'll kind of mention here is that Chandler Morris looked pretty good in this game. 12 for 15, 155 yards, no touchdowns from him. But even still, like, in this system, Chandler Morris looks pretty solid. They didn't really let him run, but they did mention that they want him to be able to run when the season comes around. So if you are drafting Chandler Morris at a pretty good discount right now, where is he going in drafts, actually? That's something I'm kind of curious about real quick, because obviously he'd be going much higher if, you know, he was... Oh, undrafted. Great. So yeah, this could end up being a pretty good steal for people who are kind of taking the shot here later in drafts, because, you know, Morris has shown that he can be a top 12, you know, quarterback for CFF, and, you know, he is able to run the ball pretty well. And so, speaking of running the ball, there was a pretty good standout here at tailback with Jamari Taylor, the North Carolina Central transfer, kind of standing out here. From the beat reporters, they said he looked like the best running back on the day. He had 9 carries for 52 yards compared to Xavier Brown, who had 24 yards on 11 carries. I'm not taking too much away from that, Grant, given the fact that we haven't really seen too much come out of the running back position the last couple of years with this staff. And I was about to kind of throw Brown to the wayside and start saying, like, oh, maybe Taylor could really break that trend here. He looked pretty good. He got himself a really good workload at NC Central last year, almost 200 carries for 1,150 yards and 15 touchdowns. So clearly he's had himself a solid workload before. But then I remember that Xavier Brown was actually pretty solid last year, even though he had got limited run. He's over 6 yards per carry. So I'm not gonna throw him under the bus. I think you're likely looking at a split backfield between these two. And I do think that at the end of drafts, when running backs have very much dried up for the most part, that you can take a shot on one of these guys. I personally might take a shot on Jamari Taylor here and there, because if something were to happen to Xavier Brown, then I do believe that Taylor would become a workhorse back, and then vice versa, right? If Taylor were to go down, Brown would become the workhorse back from there. Another fun thing here is that among all receiving options for us here, tight end Dakota Twitty led all receivers with 2 catches for 51 yards. He is a former receiver turned tight end. That is very much the archetype that we do like. And we do know that Virginia has favored the slot the last couple of years. Obviously, Malachi Fields is gone. There's not a clear guy stepping up there at wide receiver this year. Maybe it's Dakota Twitty. I wouldn't use any kind of pick except like a 30th round pick at tight end on Dakota Twitty. But, you know, just a name to kind of keep an eye out for. Next school we'll go through here is Virginia Tech, and we'll go through this one pretty quickly. Oh, not Virginia Tech, it is Georgia Tech on the screen, but yeah, I'll go through Virginia Tech real quick, because there's not really much to take away from the beat reporters, although Brett Holmes of Sports Illustrated did talk about the running back room, and he described it as a strong committee and considered Bashaul Tutin a lightning in a bottle scenario. Obviously, that's not really great for us. If you're drafting players out of this backfield, you know, guys like Braden Bennett, Tarian Stewart, who isn't even on the squad right now. He won't be arriving until the summer. I don't think we're really going to see a next man up situation to get us back to the likes of Tutin. So, yeah. Now we'll move on to the other Tech. We'll go to Georgia Tech. And there, again, wasn't much really to take away from here, because we were missing quite a few guys, especially in the receiver room. Almost none of the major wide receivers we were looking for played here. Malik Rutherford, Eric Rivers, Dean Patterson, they're all out. So we got a couple of guys that kind of broke out in this game, but it's difficult to really guess how much they're going to be impactful as the actual season starts. You know, Zion Taylor, who was kind of playing on that second team, did have 7 catches for 156 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's great and all, but again, are you even part of the two deep? We don't even really know. Bailey Stockton was another guy that got 6 catches for 107 yards. Another thing I should probably point out to do with this game, this is something you got to kind of keep in mind for a lot of these spring games, is that by default in these spring games, you're going to pass a lot more than you run. Running is when you're is one of the more, or excuse me, let me say that again. Rushing plays are obviously more physical than passing plays a lot of times. And more physicality means more likely for somebody to get injured, right? And so you're going to see teams pass a lot more than they actually will once you get here. Case in point here with Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech passed 69 times in this spring game and only ran the ball 33 times. I promise you, that will not be the ratio come the fall. But speaking of running the ball, one thing that the beat reporters, as well as the top running back here in Jamal Haynes, did point out was the fact that this running back room is looking like the deepest the running back room has looked in years, right? Even with Malachi Hosley not playing in the spring game due to injury, Treylon Maddox looked pretty good, JP Powell looked good, plenty of others looked good. Jamal Haynes is currently going as a RB25 in drafts, and I personally have not touched him at that price, because even the last couple of years, we haven't really seen him break into that final tier of being, you know, a true workhorse back for Georgia Tech. And I am concerned even more now that with more options around him, that Haynes could have an even lower ceiling this year. So something to keep in mind there. I say we go ahead and move on to the next team. Wow, I'm going through these pretty quickly. This might end up being a much shorter episode than I thought, but I guess when I'm the only one speaking here and I don't have to get other people's thoughts, we can go through this a lot more quickly. Not that I don't enjoy other people's thoughts, but you know, I just got to keep that in mind for future episodes here. So when I try to guess how long an episode's going to be. So let's move on to Pitt here. And again, once again, hard to get great information out of a lot of these things, but you know, some things that stood out to me here. One, no Desmond Reed for good reason. That's their golden goose. That is the guy they're going to be reliant on the most this season. So I would say, you know, I'm not taking much away from the running game here, but you will see that there was somebody that stood out here that I think's good to consider for the future. But one thing that did stand out was the fact that Eli Holstein did not have a great day, throwing, you know, or completing 17 of his 33 passes for 171 yards. He had a touchdown, two picks, a very slow start by all accounts here. Granted, he is coming off of injury. He got injured twice to end the season. The way, I forget which beat reporter was talking about, talking like this, but they basically were acting like that, you know, Holstein's like one or two bad games away from potentially being pulled as the starter. And I'm just not quite sure how we're getting there. Granted, he hasn't looked great, but even so, like I said, he's coming off of injury. I'm not going to read too much into that. What I will read into, though, is the fact that Kenny Johnson was with the number one receivers as he was last year. He got seven catches for 63 yards. I do believe he is going to be your Kanate Munfield replacement here for this season with Pitt. And for those of you who don't remember, Kanate Munfield was the clear wide receiver last year in terms of targets. He was clear and above, and at times was a very solid wide receiver for CFF last year. I think Kenny Johnson can be that this year. And then the other player that kind of stuck out here is Justin Cook. He's a Division II transfer, but in this game, he saw 12 catches for 68 yards, looked very impressive on the ground, I believe scoring a touchdown as well. Potentially a dynasty play because he very much fits the Desmond Reed kind of role where he's very good out of the backfield. He's an explosive running back. Very much could be a Desmond Reed replacement here. Very much a guy that you could just grab at the end of like a dynasty draft or a C2C draft and just hold on to him in a deep roster. Just see what happens here. But definitely not a redraft guy. Let me be very clear about that. Let's move on to our next team here. And we're going to... Again, we're currently talking ACC teams, but I threw Notre Dame in here because, one, it's my show. Two, you know, Notre Dame's technically an ACC team in other sports here, so we'll just kind of throw them in with these guys. Story of the game here. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago where I was answering the question from Aiden Weingartner about who the future of the quarterback room for Notre Dame is going to be, and I just kind of threw out there, oh, yeah, maybe it's Kenny Minchie. Boy, am I backtracking that about 2 weeks later here. Because the story of this game was redshirt freshman CJ Carr looking like the best of the quarterbacks and quite frankly looking like the guy who is in a really good position to be the starting quarterback for the Irish this year. Carr finished the day completing 14 of his 19 passes, 170 yards, two touchdowns, did throw the only interception among all three quarterbacks, but it came late at the game. I think things were kind of winding down already. my guy, Kenny Minchie, that I threw out there, definitely had the worst day in terms of completion percentage. Only 6 of his 14 passes for 106 yards and 1 rushing touchdown. And then Angeli, again, all these guys very much played to their stereotypes here, because Angeli, highest completion percentage of the three at 8 for his 11 passes, but also some of the lowest yards per attempt with only 108 yards on 8 completions. So very much the safe play, gets what you need, but cannot really take this offense to the next level. Like I mentioned, there's been no official announcement. I don't think there will be an official announcement. I think that, you know, Marcus Freeman's playing this game that everybody's playing, where he knows if he announces Carr is the starter, Angeli's in the portal like 2 seconds later. So you got to make sure that both Angeli and Carr are in a good position, or are believing that they're in a good position to be QB1, you know, by the time week one comes around. I think Minchie might see the writing on the wall. And Marcus Freeman has said he kind of hopes that this becomes a 2-quarterback race by the fall. So maybe he gets his wish if Minchie gets out of there, and then we can see where Minchie goes. He could be a fun option if he were to move down to the G5. A couple of quotes here I'll throw out here from Pete Sampson from The Athletic. And this very much just, again, adds to the fact that Carr feels like the best option right now. The evidence for Carr, is, he says, is neither overwhelming nor complete. Notre Dame has had 2 open practices during spring ball. Carr was good in the first, including a walk-off touchdown to Elijah Burris. But the other 2 quarterbacks were good too. Carr was great on Saturday, including a walk-off touchdown to Xavier Southall. Combined with Carr's practice showings last spring, when he flashed in both an open practice and in the blue-gold game, rising above the competition is now just a habit. He continues on saying that if Angeli and Minchie can operate the passing game, Carr can conduct it. So basically saying that Carr just offers the higher ceiling, and he's basically advocating that Carr should be the guy, given the fact that, you know, he just provides the offense another ceiling. And, you know, if there's mistakes, you're just going to have to accept, you're going to take the bad with the good there. Any other, there weren't really much of anybody else at Notre Dame standing out here, because a lot of the players that we're looking at did not participate here. Jadarian Price had 6 carries pretty early on before coming off the field. Most of your non-QB expected contributors sat pretty on. So guys like Jaden Greathouse, Jordan Faison, I believe, is playing another sport right now. I think he plays lacrosse, maybe? I can't remember off the top of my head. And so he's not participating, and so not much to take away on that front. But as I mentioned before, the story here is the quarterback competition. Right now, it looks like CJ Carr is that guy, at least if you're based on the last couple of performances. Let's keep it going here. Let's look at Syracuse, a team that I very much am interested in because I was in on them last year. That paid off greatly. They lose a lot, obviously, with LaQuint Allen, Kyle McCord, Jackson Beeks. All of those guys are gone. And so I really want to see what this offense looks like this year. Are they going to try to replicate what they did last year? And unfortunately, given the fact that Ricky Collins did not play in this game because of a hand injury, we didn't really get to see the offense exactly, I think, is how they're going to put it. But we did get to see a little bit of Jakari Williams, who was in our freshman guide for Campus Canton last year, and he was said to be pretty impressive. Finn Lincoln does point out at NunezMagician.com, a Syracuse website, I believe, for SB Nation. He points out that the offense should look a little different this year if the spring game is anything to go by, including some less snappy connections in the 10 to 15 yard range and more deep attempts, which definitely would be very nice, especially with some of these receivers kind of getting more yards per catch on their more yards per catch on their attempts. He also said to expect to see more running than we saw last year, which makes a lot of sense. We were seeing Kyle McCord hit, you know, 50, 60 pass attempts in a game. And with that more running, speaking of running, Yassine Willis apparently had himself a great day on the ground here in his limited run. He had 4 carries for 34 yards and a touchdown. It was pointed out that Willis did have some trouble reeling in some catches on the day, and it's pretty unclear right now as of now whether that's, you know, just an example of an off day in that department, or if this has been a consistent problem that can keep him from being a 3-down back like LaQuint Allen was last year. Didn't see a ton from receivers. I don't think Panna was involved much in this game. We didn't see, we saw Justin Ross Simmons get a deep shot here. But other than that, we haven't really seen much of the receivers for Syracuse. Other than that, not much else to take away from Syracuse. Again, obviously, Jakari Williams looked pretty solid there. But other than that, let's move on to the Big Ten. We're already seven teams in, and we're at the 25-minute mark. We are cooking good here. I think we'll be able to squeeze everybody in here today. So, Ohio State, this is my one Big Ten team I'm looking at here today, which, by the way, I should probably have said at the beginning of the show that, yes, there are going to be more spring games than what I talked about here today. Trust me, guys, I looked into every single one of them, at least every one that I knew took place this weekend. And if I couldn't really find any takeaways, I just didn't include them here today. So, like, Purdue comes to mind. Purdue, I took a look. I tried to find as much as I could on it. It's not even really a team that I'm that interested in for a CFF perspective, so I'm just kind of skipping them over today. If I don't talk about a team here today and you either find an article that you think is interesting that has an interesting nugget, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter, again, at @CFF_Jared. I'm happy to discuss any of it, and I'm also only human. I can't read every single article that's ever posted about everything as hard as I try to do so. Anyway, back to Ohio State here. Main thing here is that despite a lot of camp reports that especially Saiyan has been struggling, all the quarterbacks looked pretty good today, looked good during the spring showcase for Ohio State. Julian Saiyan, 17 for 24, 175 yards and a touchdown. Lincoln Kindholz, 12 for 18, 158 yards and two touchdowns there. Taven St. Clair was also out there for a little bit, but he's clearly third in this competition. What is interesting to note is that Kindholz was actually the first quarterback out there, although Julian Saiyan very much had the better day, at least between the two. Saiyan's first three drives all ended in touchdowns. It took a little bit, I believe, until the second half of the spring game for Kindholz to kind of get his stuff together and start leading some good drives. We did see some extensive run from true freshman Bo Jackson. He led all of the rushers for Ohio State with 13 carries, 88 yards, and a touchdown. Speaking of that backfield, we didn't get to see a ton of James People. He started with the first team, but then quickly headed to the bench. I still maintain that if you're going to take a shot on Ohio State back this year, he's your guy. Meanwhile, guys like CJ Donaldson, as I just mentioned, Bo Jackson, got a little bit more extended run, and that tells me that, you know, Ryan Day and staff are still trying to figure out what they have with those guys versus James People. They know what they got. They think he's going to be important for their running back room this year, so they sat him down. Let's talk about the receivers here. I didn't really know how to translate that, so sorry for the subtle silence there. But to me, one, it is notable, in my opinion, that the three starting wide receivers were Jeremiah Smith and Cardinal Tate, obviously, but not Brandon Innes in the slot, which is unfortunate because I've been drafting Brandon Innes as like that late third option for Ohio State. But Bryson Rogers actually was the first wide receiver in the slot for Ohio State for this spring game. Now, it's one snap. Brandon Innes was out there. He got some work as well. And it's not like one of them was out there like out repping the other greatly. But I do think it is interesting that Rodgers got that first snap. And then speaking of guys down the depth chart a little bit that performed well in this game, Mylon Graham had himself a day. Four catches, 104 yards, and a touchdown. Very much saying in the spring game, hey, don't forget about me. I know I didn't do much last year, but I'm still here. So if you got him on like a dynasty or a C2C roster, you're hopping with joy that Mylon Graham's dream is not dead. So that's all I got out of Ohio State. Let's move over to the SEC, where we had a ton of spring games this weekend. And so we'll definitely go ahead and get through some of these. Alabama, I'm disappointed in the Crimson Tide. They've always had one of the better spring game setups over the last couple of years, and this year they went with the flow and they did more of like an open practice with, you know, some 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 periods, not a traditional spring game. Shame on you, Mr. Kalen DeBoer, ruining one of my favorite spring games every year. Regardless, the QB order here was pretty obvious, and I don't think it should be surprising to anyone if given how we've talked about this room here. Ty Simpson was your first quarterback out, followed by Austin Mack, followed then by Keelan Russell. Like I mentioned, I think that's your starting quarterback room. I don't think it's a question of if Ty Simpson starts week one, I think it is a question of how long are they going to make that leash for him, and how, and one, can he play well enough to keep himself off of getting that leash yanked? And then two, how bad does the thing, do things need to get in order for him to be yanked? Because things got pretty bad with Jalen Bilrow last year, and they still were willing to yank him. So we'll see that how that goes. Next note has nothing really to do with CFF, but I do think it is pretty fun that we did get to see Jeremy Bernard in a trick play throwing a absolute bomb across both hash marks to Isaiah Horton. And I do believe that play went for a touchdown, so fun little trick play there. That's all I got out of Alabama. Not really much to get out there, and again, by design, I have to imagine. Let's move on over to the other A-Day. Let's move on over to Auburn and what we got here. Jackson Arnold did not participate in this because of a recent hamstring injury, so the good news is, for all of you guys out there for C2C purposes and Dynasty purposes, we got a pretty good extended look at Deuce Knight. As Justin Ferguson said in his report for the Auburn Observer, Deuce Knight is a five-star freshman, and both of those descriptions matter when describing him right now. Basically, what he means by that is when we saw Knight out there, he flashed every bit of being a five-star and flashed every bit of being a freshman. I do think that is exactly how we expected him to be coming into Auburn. I know Felix Sharp in his write-up in our Campus Canton Freshman Guide was talking about how Knight would be one of the boom or bust prospects for this class. Now, given the fact that Knight threw three touchdowns on the day, looked pretty solid for the most part, hopefully we're leaning closer towards the boom. Those three touchdowns went to some pretty big players here. One, Cam Coleman, obviously, was that's nice. One went to Perry Thompson, then one went to Wake Forest transfer Horatio Fields. Speaking of Perry Thompson, dude had himself a phenomenal day for Auburn. Scored two touchdowns total, and here's the thing, when I'm reading between the lines on how Hugh Freeze kind of talks about him, because Hugh Freeze was asked about him after him having a great day here, Hugh Freeze, basically reading between the lines, I think Hugh Freeze thinks that Perry Thompson's a flight risk, right? As he says that he and Thompson, quote, have had several talks, especially regarding the fact that Thompson was redshirted last year, and now currently looks to be still stuck on that second team this year behind, you know, Eric Singleton and Thompson's own classmates, Cam Coleman and Malcolm Simmons. Granted, Malcolm Simmons and Cam Coleman looked great last year, but Thompson's pretty good too. He averaged 25.2 yards per catch last year. Granted, he didn't have a ton of catches last year, but he is a former five-star. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Hugh Freeze thinks that Thompson is a flight risk here in the spring portal, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if Thompson did enter the portal in the spring. I think he would instantly be one of the top sought after receivers, given the fact that, again, he is a victim of a very overstocked wide receiver room, which is a good problem for Auburn to have. Not so great if you're Perry Thompson, right? He's an explosive guy. He's a great X receiver, and he's a former five-star. He's clearly got talent. I think he would be highly, highly sought after in the portal. And then, you know, maybe he can get some concessions out of Hugh Freeze, but I'm that's one thing I'm definitely looking out for, is Perry Thompson entering the portal in the spring. Let's move on over to Florida, where we did not get to see DJ Lagway appear in this game. Or no, he did, excuse me, he did appear in the game, but he just didn't throw. I think he got a ceremonial handoff, which to me is super, super weird. Like, I get it. Like, you want to make sure people know that he's still the starter, but like, are we really concerned that people are going to confuse Aiden Warren or Harrison Bailey as the potential starters for Florida this year? I don't know. We'll move on from quarterbacks. There's not really much to talk about there, although Harrison Bailey did have himself a really nice second half. But Jacoby Jackson, the RB2 for Florida, went off in this game. 10 carries, 198 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I do think that does, like, if you're somebody who's drafting Jaden Baugh, who's currently going as RB29 in drafts right now, I do think Jacoby Jackson should worry you a little bit in the fact that, you know, if you're drafting Jaden Baugh as RB29, you're expecting him to be like a workhorse back for Florida. And if Jackson continues to perform well like this, I don't know how you can really expect Baugh to, you know, get enough carries to be warranting a top 30 running back pick there. Wide receivers, Trey/Eugene Wilson still held out, so obviously that kind of provides some good opportunity here. And the opportunity was seized by true freshman Dallas Wilson, the five-star prospect, depending on where you look. Wilson ended the game with a record-setting 10 catches for 195 yards and two touchdowns. That's the most receptions in a spring game ever for Florida. He was playing on the second team for what it's worth, so he's probably playing against, you know, backups and stuff like that. But regardless, I do think Wilson's a pretty clear future star here for Florida, especially if he and Lagway can start hooking up. Speaking of Lagway, to me, the offense looked good for Florida. No doubt, based on what I'm reading. But to me, the question is there another gear this year once Lagway takes command? As I've pointed out before, Lagway gets drafted pretty decently highly in these drafts. And my concern is that Lagway never reached above 14 fantasy points in a single game for CFF last year, despite the fact that, again, he's going with QB 20 in drafts. It remains to be seen whether or not Lagway, as talented as he is, obviously, if he can unlock a side of this offense that can start producing some CFF receivers that we haven't really seen over the last couple of years. We'll move on here. We'll go over this next one pretty quickly. We'll touch on Kentucky, where I just owe a little bit of an apology. Maybe I've been a little bit too harsh on one Dante Dowdle. I was not a big fan of Dante Dowdle coming out of Nebraska. I didn't think that he would be able to come into UK, take over the starting job. I still like Jason Patterson over there. But given what we're reading here, it seems like that Dowdle is looking the park, and he looks like a big-time player for Kentucky this upcoming year. And so, based on what this spring game here, he's in Bush Hamden's offense. Bush Hamden, if I remember correctly, was responsible for some of those great Boise State running backs we've seen over the last couple of years, and so he's clearly going to want to have a workhorse back. I think I've been a little bit too harsh on one Dante Dowdle, and I do think I'll probably move him up in my rankings just a little bit here. Let's see, where do I have Dante Dowdle? Probably way too low. Do I even have him ranked? Oh, come on. Wrong page. There we go. Dante. I do not. That's a shame on me. I should have him ranked even if I was fading him a little bit. So yeah, I'll add him to my rankings, and I'll probably have him move up decently highly, probably in, I'd say, yeah, around RB 40, like 40, 45-ish range. I think that's where I'll probably add him. So let's move on to our next SEC school. Let's talk about Tennessee here, where obviously there's been a ton of drama surrounding Nico Iomaleava. I figured this was the point to really talk about it here in the show. And I guess a lot of you are going to ask, like, what do you think of Nico transferring? What do you think of, like, Tennessee and everything? One, I'll tell you, we discussed this on the upcoming Defending the Natty episode with myself and Nate Marquise, so you can listen to my full thoughts there. But basically, long story short is I think Nico didn't deserve all the blame for Tennessee's offense last year. I think he deserved some of it. I think that I don't necessarily blame him for trying to get a better deal, given the fact that we're seeing people like Darian Mensah get these massive deals from a school like Duke. And I don't blame Iomaleava for going up to Tennessee and saying, like, hey, if they can pay him $4 million, why can't I get $4 million? But to me, like, the problem really came once Iomaleava and his father started actually shopping around to other schools and going behind the backs and everything. Like, I'm sorry, I don't like players. Like, coaches, you can only do so much about, but players especially, like, y'all have the control of whether you go in the portal or not. Just announce you're entering the portal, and then you can make your demands and stuff like that. Or at the very least, make your demands. If they say no, enter the portal, and if they really want you back, there you go. Like, grow some balls, please. Don't do this behind the scenes, feel things out and everything. That burned Iomaleava big time here. Regardless, I'm curious to see where Iomaleava ends up. USC obviously would be fun, although I drafted a lot of Jaden Maiava, so I'm really hoping that doesn't happen. Colorado, Texas Tech, although I do think Texas Tech recently said that they are not interested. And then North Carolina seems like an obvious spot that could absolutely go after him. As Nate pointed out on the Defending the Natty episode, North Carolina was the highest bidder on John Mateer, so Wouldn't shock me at all if they were going to try to be the highest bidder on Iamaliava. And so, I don't know. As I've mentioned before, with guys entering the portal like this, it's difficult to really give CFF analysis until they actually land on a spot. What I can do is talk about what's happening at Tennessee, where one Jake Merklinger and true freshman George McIntyre got most of the reps in the spring game. Merklinger, 6 of 15 for the day for 84 yards and 2 touchdowns. Meanwhile, McIntyre, 12 of 15 for 123 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's great for McIntyre, but he is a true freshman. I highly doubt that we see him get the starting job. And then Merklinger, boy, limited run so far. And again, here in the spring game, not a great showing. I heavily suspect that Tennessee will be going into the portal. The rest of the starting lineup is pretty interesting, though. Dean Bishop is your RB1 for Tennessee, although Star Thomas did get the most carries on the day. I think that Tennessee is treating Dean Bishop as the RB1. We also did not get to see Peyton Lewis in this, so to me, it's unclear as to how the running back room breaks down after Bishop. Is it Star Thomas, then Lewis? Is it Lewis and Thomas? I don't know. I don't think any of them are going to be what, you know, Dylan Sampson was last year for Tennessee, but I do think that we could see Bishop end up in that kind of RB, you know, 35 to 50 range. And so I still think he's absolutely worth a shot in drafts because he's been pretty solid for Tennessee the last couple of years. And then at receiver, we saw Mike Matthews at X, to me, not too surprising. And then boy, once I had to start looking up names at slot and Z with Braylon Staley and Trey Weary, did I really start to realize how thin this wide receiver room has gotten. Obviously, Chris Brazell not mentioned here, and that's because he did not play due to injury. I fully expect that he will get that Z spot whenever he comes back from injury, but definitely a lot to kind of still figure out with Tennessee, and obviously all that centers around what they do at the quarterback position. And I've had people reach out saying, like, hey, what does Tennessee do at the quarterback position? I say, I don't think there's a soul on the planet that knows what's going to happen with that Tennessee quarterback room. So we're all just going to have to sit around and wait to find out. Let's head across the state here to Vanderbilt, who had their own spring game here, where Diego Pavia and Eli Sowers did not play. Makes sense. They're keys to the offense. No reason to really hurt or put them in harm's way. Really, the only other takeaway I had from Vanderbilt was a name to kind of file away is Bryson Coleman, who has been, according to reports, consistently turning heads this spring. Jason Beck's system really isn't what we typically look for with a top wide receiver target, but, you know, if Coleman continues to be as consistent as reports have claimed him to be, Vanderbilt's absolutely a team that's not good enough to sit there and say, like, oh, we have to maintain our system and spread things around. Like, no, if they got a dude, they're going to pass the ball to them. And so just a name to file away with Bryson Coleman. I'm not saying draft him at all, but just saying that he's been pretty consistently brought up in practice reports. He's got that steady drum beat that I absolutely love looking for. So, all right, we're at the 45-minute mark, and we're just going to plow on through this. Let's get to the G5 teams. A lot of these have pretty limited takeaways for the most part, so I say let's go ahead and plow through this. Let's go ahead and talk about Army after I take a sip of water. I probably should have asked for the sip of water first before I just left you guys on silent there for a little bit. Not much to take away from the Army game. It was a pretty low scoring game, 16-14, but one thing that was pretty nice to confirm is that it seems like Dwayne Coleman has indeed locked down that top quarterback spot, and he did rip off a 58-yard run in this game, which is obviously very nice to see that he was able to do that, one, against a defense that practices against this system every single day, and then two, that he can rip off those big runs, something that he was kind of missing quite a bit of in his limited action so far with Army. So I still think Coleman's a fun, you know, let's see, where is Coleman going in drafts? I really should have written some of this stuff down, you know. Shame on me. I should not type in Coleman. There's a ridiculous number of Colemans in CFF this year. I mean, should we just talk about Bryson Coleman? Chris K and I were joking the other day that you could make a whole CFF team out of the guys named Coleman. Because, I mean, shoot, the first round could be Cam Coleman, then you go Jonah Coleman, and then you immediately can jump to oh my gosh, you know, Miles Coleman, Malachi Coleman, all those guys, right? And then eventually you can get down to Dwayne Coleman here. I'm going off too much of a tangent. Yeah, Dwayne Coleman's going like QB 63 right now in drafts. You know, you've seen him taken in the, you know, 24th, 25th round range. Like, I think that's a phenomenal quarterback pick, given what we just saw Bryson Daly do last year. Yeah, I don't think you're going to get Bryson Daly numbers, but even if you get like 60, 70%, like, Coleman's still absolutely going to be worth a pick that late. Let's move on to our next team, and that is the Florida Atlantic University. Obviously, our boy Zach Kittley here with our boys Caden Veltkamp and Easton Messer. And there's not really much else to say here, except this spring game seems to confirm everything that we've been wanting to hear out of Florida Atlantic. Kittley's going to go nuts. He's going back to his roots. He's going to let Veltkamp and others shine. And Easton Messer, according to all beat reporters, seems like clearly the number one wide receiver for the system. He finished the day with 4 catches, 104 yards, and a touchdown. Again, not really much else to say. The only thing I will kind of caution here is I've kind of mentioned, or myself and others have mentioned the name like Sean Wilson or J.R. Wilson, the transfer from Virginia, as a clear other guy to target in this system. He finished the day with 2 catches for 21 yards, very much just kind of in the mix of just a bunch of other guys. Versus Messer was clearly standing out. And so I still say that probably, you know, spend your capital on Messer and then save Wilson or whoever else you want to target in the system for like a last round guy. So, all right, let's move on from the AAC to the CUSA, where we actually got quite a bit of good information here over the weekend, which is great because if I were to tell you, that the CUSA beat report scene would be one of the better ones of amongst conferences this weekend, I would have lost that bet. We'll start with the UTEP Miners here. And sorry, Malachi Nelson fans, but Skylar Locklear is still your QB1. Yes, even over Malachi Nelson. Locklear had a great day here. 14 of his 17 attempts completed. 145 yards, a touchdown. He also threw an interception. Meanwhile, Nelson had, or finished with 12 of his 24 pass attempts completed for 110 yards. He also had a touchdown and interception. And based on what I can tell from the way beat reporters talk about Nelson, this was one of his better days. And if you're telling me a 50% completion day is one of your better days, yeah, I think the Malachi Nelson dream's pretty dead here. But you know who's not dead is the hope of one Hashan Wilson becoming a CFF running back. And some of y'all might be sitting there saying, Jared, what the heck was that? Who's Sean Wilson? Sean Wilson was a Charlotte running back last year that broke out in a couple of different ways on a very, very bad Charlotte team. And based on what we can see here from the beat reporters, Sean Wilson has started standing out amongst a group of what they consider to be very good running backs. Sean Wilson had himself a day here, 83 yards on the ground on 12 carries. He also had 2 touchdowns. On the day, his main competition at the running back position is Cam Thomas, who kind of made that switch to running back this offseason. But Thomas got held out for most of the scrimmage, which could be a really good thing or a really bad thing, as I've mentioned before. If you're being held out of a scrimmage like this, likely means that the team expects you to be a significant contributor down the line. But Brett Bloomquist of the El Paso Times did say he believes that Wilson could end up being a 15-carry-per-game starting tailback in the fall. So you heard it right there from the beat reporter's mouth. They believe that Hashan Wilson is on his way to being a starting running back for this team. And as far as I know, he's not being drafted at all. So maybe a guy to take a shot on in the last couple of rounds of a draft, especially when you feel like running back rooms have just completely dried up all over. And I do think it's a worthwhile running back room to take a look at, considering that UTEP lost 97% of their tailback yardage from last year. Last note for UTEP is regarding Kenny Odom, the wide receiver. He was held out of this scrimmage, but he was being described by beat reporters as the expected star receiver, which, you know, something to keep in mind here. I don't really know how much that is worth in Scotty Walden's system. Who knows? But just something to kind of file in the back of your mind that Kenny Odom is being viewed as the clear wide receiver one, even though he is injured right now. Let's move on over to our Western Kentucky Hilltoppers here, where we get a first look at how Rick Bowie's system is translating here at West Kentucky, and so far so good. It looks phenomenal. Maverick MacGyver and the offense had 5 straight drives of 5 touchdowns. The offense was just absolutely clicking. MacGyver himself, 18 of his 23 passes complete, 4 touchdowns. Dude was just absolutely on fire in the scrimmage. And another name to note here is one Cameron Flowers. I do think it's a name to note here, considering the wide receiver depth chart is not super clear here at all. For Western Kentucky, I do like Andrew Henry coming up from, I believe, Western Illinois, from the FCS level. And then, obviously, if you listen to my discussion with Jorah Paisley on the Let Purple Rain podcast, we did discuss this system. And we are taking a look at that slot position there with, you know, Cody Epps and Katie Hutchinson kind of battling it out there. But seems like that Cameron Flowers is another name to note here, considering that 2 of the touchdowns that Maverick MacGyver threw on the day went to him. Flowers ended the day with 6 catches for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. Again, this could absolutely be a spring game warrior kind of deal. He can never show up again. I'm going to go back through as many Western Kentucky beat reports that I can find, if they're available, and seeing if I can catch Flowers' name mentioned before, because I do vaguely remember him being mentioned before, but I want to confirm that. But as of right now, a name to file in the back of your mind. If you really, really want to get him, I'd save him for like the last round of your draft. Let's move on over to MTSU, where it looks like we have a new top target, which is obviously great news, considering that Amari Kelly, despite the fact he couldn't get a lot of touchdowns last year, was a clear top target for this offense and could have been a serious CFF wide receiver, you know, had he not injured himself, had he not had to leave the season, or had he not been extremely limited on the touchdown front. But Vaziato, the starting quarterback for Middle Tennessee, only had one drive on the day, and on that drive, he hit Miles Butler 3 times on that same drive. And quote from Vaziato, "I love number 5, man. He came in last summer with a chip on his shoulder. He's probably the hardest worker you'll ever meet. He's a great kid. He does what he's supposed to do on the field, off the field, whatever it is." Butler, if you guys remember, probably don't, but he did have a breakout game towards the end of last season where he tallied 101 yards and a touchdown against UTEP. We do see that Holden Willis and Amari Kelly being gone here has vacated 167 regular season targets between the two of them. I think that's plenty for Butler to benefit from. Obviously, he's not going to get all of that, but if Butler can kind of reach that 90 target range, I do think we could be in the midst of a potential really good late round pick at wide receiver here for this system. Speaking of system plays, this is one I don't really want to play into that much, but I do think it's worth mentioning considering that this comes directly from the head coach's mouth, and that is Ja'Kyle Middlebrook is considered by Derek Mason to be, quote, head and shoulders ahead of the rest of the running back room. Derek Mason continued on saying, again, clarifying, Ja'Kyle is the clear number one back. Although, based on other comments that Derek Mason said in that same interview, he is very concerned about the depth of this running back room, so I do believe he will be hunting the running back position in the portal for this spring. And as much as I want to believe him when he says that Middlebrook is a clear number one back for Middle Tennessee State, we haven't really seen a clear top back out of Derek Mason's teams over the last couple of years. So I'm definitely not saying going and drafting Middlebrook, but definitely name to file in the back of your mind if we continue to hear some great things. Let's move on over to the MAC. You guys love when we discuss the MAC. And I sincerely mean that. That was not meant to be sarcastic at all. You guys love it when we discuss the MAC. So we'll start here with Ball State. We got 2 teams that had spring games this weekend that we were able to get at least some Yeah, we definitely got some out of Ball State, but like Eastern Michigan, we'll talk about here in a second. I only had really one potential takeaway there, and I'm not even sure how much I'm buying into it. But Ball State, we got some pretty fun things. One, under new head coach Mike Yuremovich, yes, Kyle Kelly is back at quarterback, and you Kyle Kelly fans may finally get your wish with him being at quarterback. He is a excellent dual threat option. Kelly went 5 for 5, not just in completions, but touchdowns when it came to the red zone drills. He was absolutely on fire. And a couple of wide receivers kind of stuck out here. One is Eric Weatherly, the Bucknell wide receiver. He stuck out as a wide receiver to watch out for, and he was, you know, a top target for Bucknell last year, 111 targets, 75 receptions, 885 yards, and 8 touchdowns. You also had true freshman Elisha Durham sticking out as he was taking snaps of the first team. And Kyle Kelly was talking about how he works with Elisha Durham a lot, like on the side when it comes to, you know, getting reps outside of practice. So obviously it's nice to see both of those guys there. I'd be more excited about this, though, if I've seen Yuremovich produce a top-tier wide receiver in any of his previous 3 years at Butler, and that's just straight up has not been what happened. I think the highest that I saw was like 78 targets in his first year, and even then it wasn't like great production. Maybe passing game coordinator Craig Harmon can change that, but the problem is Craig Harmon does not have a ton of play-calling history, so it's difficult to really tell exactly what's going to happen there, but maybe keep an eye on the likes of Eric Weatherly and Elisha Durham. If they're as good as advertised, we know that MAC teams are more than happy to just force feed guys that, you know, are clearly better than the rest of their competition. Let's move on quickly to Eastern Michigan. Again, not too much here to really talk about, but I do think that it is important to note that former Michigan running back transfer Tavir Dunlap led the team with 41 rushing yards on 9 carries and a touchdown. Really, that's about it. There isn't really much else here. I do see people talk about Terry Lockett. I guess I'll throw my thoughts about him out there real quick. So Terry Lockett is interesting, right? Because we've seen the possibility of there being like a wide receiver one standing out for the likes of Eastern Michigan. And as I just mentioned, right, like it's possible for there to be a guy to stand out amongst a MAC team and then just get force-fed targets. But the problem is you haven't seen that really with Eastern Michigan or this coaching staff. And my projections aren't really in love with the likes of Terry Lockett, right? The wide receiver one for Eastern Michigan the last 2 years has averaged about 11.9 yards per reception. Now, granted, Terry Lockett's been averaging about 14.3 yards per reception, but even still, that gets, like, when you put it at, you know, 87 targets, and you consider the fact that both the system top wide receiver and Terry Lockett averaged roughly about 56 to 59% of their catches, you're getting a total yardage range of about 600 to 700 yards, and it's just not something I'm really super interested in. But go check out, I know Justin Leo did an article on him over at Volume Pig, so Justin Leo is a very smart guy, so absolutely go get his thoughts on him as well. But just my initial takeaway is I'm not a huge fan of the idea of going after Terry Lockett, or really anybody in the system as of right now. Dunlap strikes me as an interesting potential big fish, small pond scenario, but I'm obviously going to need a lot more than, you know, him leading the spring game in rushing. So let's keep it on a move on here. Let me get a sip of water here before we touch on Washington State. So Washington State, again, one of these teams like, not Digger. Jimmy Rogers is one of these hyper paranoid coaches that's worried about literally anything and everything getting out about his team. He expressly said that he's nerfing the spring game so he doesn't get more film out there on his guys, which, like, dude, chill out. Everything Rogers is doing here is trying to prevent transfers. He said in an interview during this spring showcase that, you know, the starting job isn't Zevi Eckhaus. And, like, dude, who are you fooling? Like, Eckhouse will be the starting quarterback. He's like trying to play up Jackson Potter, and I do like Jackson Potter, don't get me wrong, but like everything is like everything else says that Eckhouse will be the starting quarterback. Like, don't try to lie to us, dude. Speaking of Eckhouse, he finished the day pretty well, completing 14 of his 19 passes for 143 yards and a touchdown. A lot of people are kind of interested in the wide receiver position here, considering the fact that we just got, oh my god, I can't remember the, Griffin Wild, I believe his name is. He just went to Northwestern. You know, he was decently solid for South Dakota State last year. Maybe we can get some solid production out of a guy here. So they were talking about wide receivers, and a name that was brought up was one Leon Neal Jr., who was praised by both Eckhouse as well as Jimmy Rogers, who called out Neal when he was asked about any kind of spring standout, saying, quote, if you were to ask me one player that I think has stood out, I would say Leon Neal. He's come out and made plays pretty consistently every day through spring ball. It's a guy that maybe hasn't had the opportunity to come onto the field and had meaningful reps, but he's made the most of every moment thus far in spring. It's also important to point out, I would say, that Neal also earned a scholarship from this staff earlier this offseason, so it's pretty clear that they do like him quite a bit. Rogers was also pushed to ask for anybody else that stood out, and he did offer up Josh Meredith as a guy who deserved praise for his spring performance so far. All this to note that that the Cougars did not have JUCO star transfer wide receiver Devin Ellison that day, as he was out with a minor injury, so to me it's pretty difficult to tell who exactly between Ellison, Neal, and Meredith is really going to stand out there. I do think I can remove Trey Shackleford from my wide receiver rankings, as he has hardly been mentioned at all. I mentioned the running back room for this team before, and it has come to my attention that Angel Johnson, the guy that I said would probably lead this team, has been out with an injury all spring. That's obviously going to hurt him. Meanwhile, veteran of the team Leo Pulalasi and, you know, South Dakota State transfer Kirby Voorhees have been getting the shares of carries in his absence. Rogers' offensive system the last couple of years has typically ran enough to support a CFF RB1 even, or CFF RB, even with, you know, them splitting a ton of carries, but I do think we should be very cautious about any of these guys, at least in year one going into this year. We're not exactly sure how well this system's going to translate even to a Mountain West schedule. So, that being said, let's move on from Washington State. Let's try to finish up here with our Sun Belt teams. We got a lot of Sun Belt teams, or I say a lot. We got four Sun Belt teams to really go through here. And boy, oh boy, yeah, look at this—an hour and 2 minutes, man. Pat on the back for me, man. We're killing it. That means I'm about to absolutely take forever on these last four teams. I'm kidding. I don't have a ton to really talk about with these last four teams here. But one shout out to the South Alabama beat reporters. They provided a ton of great, great coverage here. But to me, there was one thing that really kind of stuck out to me. If you go back and listen to my podcast with Joe Arpaese on the Let Purple Rain podcast on YouTube, and I can't remember if we discussed it in the preview show on YouTube or if we did it in the actual paywalled part of the show, but we did discuss the South Alabama wide receiver room. We agreed that, one, this is a system that I would say is being pretty under-discussed this offseason. Like, I think, given the fact that we've seen, you know, the likes of Colin Lacey and Jamal Pritchett become wide receiver ones for CFF, like Major Applewhite's wide receiver system has been one of the most consistent for CFF the last couple of years. Really, the only year that didn't really work out was the Jared Wayne year. Otherwise, you know, Jalen Tolbert was awesome. Jamal Pritchett, as I just mentioned, all those guys. It's been great. We agreed, me and Joe Arpaese, when we discussed it, that it came down between Devin Voisin and Anthony Eager. Voisin being the, you know, veteran, guy coming back off of injury, but, you know, when he was healthy last, he was looking to be potentially that wide receiver one for this system. And then you got the young, kind of higher upside guy here with Anthony Eager. I've been leaning towards the Devin Voisin comeback this year, but if you ask Eager, who was interviewed during this spring game here, he lives up to his name and how ready he is to be that top guy. Quote from Eager, "I had a lot of pressure on me stepping up, and I feel like I'm filling that role with Jamal Pritchett leaving, called him JP, but Jamal Pritchett leaving. I feel like I can fill his shoes a little bit, and I'm confident I can be that guy this year. So, Eager, like, I don't know if you guys heard my clap there, but, like, props to you, sir, on the confidence. It is enough for me to say, I do have Voisin in my rankings right now. I will probably be adding Eager as well. I think both of these guys are worth drafting, just to take the shot on who you could potentially get a top 10 wide receiver out of this room. Hopefully their prices don't get too crazy, because I don't want to spend up too high for these guys right now until we get a clear answer at who's the wide receiver one. Speaking of top of the depth chart, let's take a look at the running back room here. And I do think it's now pretty much confirmed that we can say that this is going to be Kentrell Bullock's season as the RB1. He's a veteran of this program. This is his third year there. PJ Martin is the guy behind him. He's being described as a clear RB2. I think Bullock is a pretty solid grab in drafts right now. Let's see, where is Bullock going? I don't remember him being going super high. Yeah, RB56. So you're looking at him there in the 12th round. I think that's a great pick right in that range. What do I have him ranked as? I'm pretty sure I have him ranked him lower than that. And I probably should move him up, I think. Yeah, I got him ranked as RB72. I'm currently working on my back of the napkin projections for running backs, and I think once I get to him there, that's going to get him to bump up my rankings quite a bit. So that's enough out South Alabama. Let's head on over to Texas State, where this quarterback room, at least from all the transfers they were bringing in, really did seem like just a giant mess, because, you know, they were bringing in the likes of Javonte McCoy. I forget the other guy that they were kind of bringing in that people kind of liked. They're bringing in Holton Gariner and stuff like that. But it does seem like this quarterback competition has settled down between two guys here, between Brad Jackson, the veteran of the program. He's been around for a bit, got some run last year when Jordan McLeod was injured, and then Holton Gariner, the Auburn transfer. Based on the reports that we got out of the spring game, they do say that Texas State seems to be intent on running the ball, which does seem to indicate that Brad Jackson probably is the best option for the job, given what he can do with his legs. Not that, you know, Gariner can't run, but Jackson definitely brings a different level to that. Based on what we are able to read out of these reports, though, the offense was definitely struggling as the defense was winning the day so much that they had to turn off the scoreboard. Other than that, not really much to take away from here. No receivers were really said to have stood out, although I do think it is notable that Bo Sparks was allowed to speak to the media. That's always a good sign, especially at these smaller programs, in terms of who the coaching staff trusts. And a lot of times that does translate to on-field production. And then also notable that Lincoln Pear, the expected RB1 for Texas State, was out on the day, so we didn't get to really see much from him. All right, we got just a couple more takeaways from these last two teams here. We'll talk about James Madison here, and this is start playing the funeral music here a little bit, because boy, oh boy, for Sluka enthusiasts, this is not what you want to hear, given the fact that the first quarterback that took snaps at quarterback, boy, that was redundant. The first guy to take snaps at quarterback was Billy Atkins. Wasn't even Cam Coleman, I think it was Richmond transfer coming up. Like, Billy Atkins, a guy that we've seen not really work for this offense. If Sluka can't even beat him out for starting reps, boy, that is not good. Another name to kind of point out here, maybe a bit of a dynasty play. I don't really know how much stock to put into guys at this point, especially G5 guys, but freshman running back Jackson McCarter kind of stood out with a pair of touchdowns. He was said to look really, really good for James Madison. I still think George Pettaway will be your number one back here for JMU, but, you know, McCarter's a name to maybe file in the back of your head if you're in, like, a super, super deep league. I don't know. But again, not much to take away from James Madison, not really a ton of reporting on them, outside of the fact that, again, Billy Atkins was your guy to take the first team reps at quarterback, at least to start. They very much rotated as the day went on, but, you know, those first snaps are pretty important. Last team we'll discuss here is Marshall. Very kind of difficult to really figure out what's kind of system we can really expect here from Marshall, but we did see Carlos Del Rio Wilson have himself a pretty solid day, going completing 5 of his 7 attempts for 113 yards, along with 21 yards on the ground and a touchdown. The other name that really kind of stood out here was Antoine Roberts. He's the guy that kind of shined at running back. He was coming off of injury last year, didn't play a ton, and the coaching staff seemed very excited for him to return this year. He had 5 carries for 35 yards and a touchdown in this game. Maybe I take a shot on him in like the last 2 rounds of drafts and stuff like that. Again, it's a year where running back is so crazy after a certain point that like when you get into those final 5 rounds of drafts, you're feeling like drafting, you know, backups and stuff like that. Roberts may be a guy I take a shot on if I'm trying to find a guy that maybe can be RB1 week 1. As for receivers, nothing really stood out there, as every indication said that the receiving game was very spread out, no clear wide receiver 1. So not much really to take away from there. Alrighty, holy mackerel, we covered 25 teams. Actually 26, I forgot about Virginia Tech and making a graphic for them earlier. I say making a graphic, I mean adding their graphic. Anyway, I'm getting delirious. I'm talking too long here, y'all. We got through 25 spring games and the takeaways from them here in just a little over an hour and 10 minutes. I will give myself a pat on the back, and I have only lost about 50% of my voice. So we are winning all around. We got a ton of spring games even next week, so be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for the next Defending the Natty episode. Me and Nate are going to be discussing 2025 freshmen, so that will be a ton of fun. But with all of that, we have come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show and leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus to Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday, where we have even more spring games to discuss. And we'll have the spring portal will be officially opened at that point. So we'll be looking at that inevitable chaos. So until then, really appreciate you guys, and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.